beautiful people, welcome back to another episode of Human Being. It is me, it is I, it is Ali, your one and only. Now, today is pretty special. This is the last episode for season one, and for this last episode, we wanted it to be special. Now, as you know, so far this season, we've interviewed a lot of men. You know, the testosterone was high. And so we decided that we had to get a woman for our last episode, and you know, who better than someone we hold close and dear to our hearts, an old-time friend of ours, and you know, someone who's seasoned in her field, right? So without further ado, let me just introduce you to the one and the only Nikki, your host. Nikki, say hi.
Hello, people.
That was very confusing. Was it? I made it so like you were the guest.
Right? No, I was wondering what was going on.
No, people. She's not the guest.
I'm not the guest, guys. No, for the guest.
Wow, I practiced in a... But anyways, no for our guest. Her name is Natalie Daly Grunenfelder. Did I get that right?
Grunenfelder.
Okay. No, she is a fine arts painter and illustrator, and she's been practicing and in her game for 7 years since graduating from not just any regular school, you know, not just any party shop, you know, but the Edna Manley School of Performing and Visual Arts. Yeah, right there. So she knows what she did want for a long time. Mm-hmm. No, we're gonna let her get into what her we're gonna just walk through the process with her, but you know, I want you guys to give her a, you know, it's a warm welcome here on Human Being Podcast. And yay, Natalie, hi.
Hey, even though I thought the first intro was for me. Hey.
You know, a little blunder here or there never hurt anyone.
Thank you all for having me.
Okay. So great to have you here.
Thank you.
All right, so Natalie, what should we touch on first? Should we,
well,
you know what?
I think we should do the icebreaker first, and then you
icebreaker.
Know, yeah, and then have her, you know, tell us.
All right. All right, so Shen, shoot with the icebreaker.
All right, so this is a would you rather question. Mm-hmm. And of course, around here, we ask very weird questions. So would you rather live in the ocean or on the moon? And you have to tell us why.
Live on the ocean. Would I have food? Will I have housing? Like I'll be like proper island surrounding by the ocean, or like on our boats?
No, in the ocean or on the moon.
In the ocean.
Yeah.
I prefer living in the ocean. I've always loved the water. I love swimming. I find it very relaxing to even just look out at the water. Even though I'm sometimes deathly terrified of some of the things living in the ocean that we still have not discovered yet, or even the ones that we've discovered, it's still kind of amazing to me just to see and admire the beauty of the ocean. The moon, I don't know, being surrounded by so much darkness, and I know there are stars, you can see the other planets, so on. So, but I'd feel way too isolated out there on the moon. So definitely the ocean for me.
Oh, and you know, the whole food situation is covered because...
Yeah.
You got the fishes in the sea, under the sea. But you know, if I was some like psych major or something, you know, because, you know, it's a trend these days online for people to read too much into everything that people say and post. I could be like, oh, well, she doesn't like the moon. So she doesn't like isolation. She probably has separation anxiety, or, you know, them ways there. The internet is such a wonderful, weird place these days. Mm-hmm. But yeah. All right. So, Natalie, now that we've broken the ice, right? Just tell us who you are. Who is Natalie Daly Grunenfelder?
Well, I'm a fine arts painter, as you said earlier. I've always loved the arts. Since I was a child, I've been painting, or even if my parents tried to dispose of things in the house, I would repurpose them. I'll make dolls, TVs, skateboards. The skateboards may not have worked, but at least I tried. And I would even make jewelry from something as simple as the bags that you get oranges in, the little mesh looking bags. I'd cut them and turn them into chokers or something. I was just always very, very, very creative. Very laid back, very private. And I don't know, I just enjoy the arts, nature, spending time with family and friends, just a nice quiet life.
Okay, what inspires the art that you make?
I'm mostly inspired by African art and culture. I love the vibrancy of their colors, their use of line work, their use of patterns. And it's also intriguing to me how different parts of Africa uses different patterns or different symbols in their clothing or in their artwork. And I love the diversity of the culture. So I'm very inspired by that.
Okay, cool.
All right, and speaking about before, like Afrocentric culture, I realized that not just in like art, but in fashion and music, other forms of the art, it's becoming extremely popular these days. Like, is that like a wave that you would support, or you'd say people they're only using it for like fame? Because a lot of people have been accused of that. I'm sure you've heard of the whole blackface thing that's becoming an issue with a lot of artists. So what is your thought on that?
Not blackface, it's blackfishing.
That word.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I was about to say, blackface needs to be an issue. It's definitely an issue. It's always been an issue. But even if people are doing it for the wrong reasons, I look at the positive that it's still bringing light to the culture. Like, it's still bringing light to the beauty that Africa has to offer to the rest of us. So I'm all for the wave. I'm all for people now finally loving themselves more, embracing their, embracing their natural hair, so to speak. Because when I was in prep school, for instance, it was the thing to have processed hair. I couldn't wait to process my hair, because that's what everybody else was doing. And I thought it was easier to manage my hair and so and so. Now, my hair is natural. It's always out and I always get compliments on it. And I love it. I just love that people are now embracing the kinkiness of our hair, the coils in our hair, the natural shape of our bodies even, where before it was great to be thin and shapeless. And everybody wants to look as curvy as most African women. So I love it. I love the attention it's getting.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead, Jen.
Oh, okay. All right. Back to the art side of things. I'm not exactly sure like how art spaces work in Jamaica, but like how easy or difficult was it like to break into that space?
It took a while. So when I just left school, I got a bit frustrated that my pieces weren't selling as quickly as I would have wanted. But to be fair, I've improved a lot more now. So my pieces do get sold pretty or fairly easily now. And with the use of social media, it's very easy to get exposure as long as you maintain the amount of content that you post on your page on a weekly basis. But it's the creative scene in Jamaica or even internationally has grown significantly. So a lot more people are interested in seeing the work. A lot of people are interested in investing in art. And locally, pre-COVID, I would always participate in things such as Kingston Night Market. And the marketing for Kingston Night Market was great because a lot of people and even tourists would stop by to buy items. It's like a craft market. So you'd have art or other locally made products such as hair products, skincare products, even baskets or furniture or little trinkets that you can take back home when you're traveling. And then there's Kingston Creative. So I've done an art show down by the Swiss store, which is downtown, which was also very successful. Once again, many tourists, many young people, many business people just came out just to view the work and view what young creatives or seasoned creatives have to offer locally. So there was definitely a lot that Jamaica or even internationally has been doing for creatives now. It slowed down a bit because of COVID, But as I said, social media has been helping, seeing that I can't do any face-to-face interactions with people anymore.
And that's interesting. Now that you mentioned COVID and the fact that things have shifted after it became a thing, because we've been in it almost 2 years now. What, how, as I, like, using social media, how did you adapt? Because I know that you post artwork, because I follow your art pages and stuff, but I follow you. I know that you post the artworks and then you may update when it's sold. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, how do you navigate your art space or your market mid-COVID? How has that adjustment been for you? Because I know you used to do paint and sip too. So how have you been coping with that?
Well, I still do paint and sips. So I haven't stopped. I just have smaller groups. So, and word of mouth is also very powerful. So persons that I've done paint and sips with before, they then tell their friends, they tell their family, and then they reach out to me via social media, which is why social media is so powerful. Because if you don't have a website, which you should have a website or even an online portfolio when you're creative, just having a central space where people can reach out to you to make a booking, to make inquiries, it's very effective. It's very effective and it's very beneficial for your business. During COVID last year, I had left my 9-to-5 and I was only doing art, and I was able to survive off that. I was making good money from it because of the marketing, and people were spending, people were investing in art. It slowed down a bit more this year, and that's because people just didn't expect COVID to last this long. People didn't expect it to affect the economy this badly either. So I think people are being a bit more conservative with their spend now, which is why you have to be versatile in the market. So if I know that people aren't investing that much in paintings because it's a higher price point, I would then ramp up my marketing for paint and sips or art tutoring, because that's something else that people are interested in and that is more affordable. So with the paint and sips, for instance, if you charge a fee of $3,500 per person or $4,000 per person, if each person just pays that small fee, then it's not putting a lot of financial strain on one person, but still I'm able to make a profit from hosting those events. So you just have to be flexible in the market.
Okay. And you know, it's interesting that you mentioned leaving your 9-to-5. There's this weird phenomenon that happened last year that you would never have expected to see. Typically, when we go through a recession, right, people lose their jobs. Like, that's something that's outside of their control. Mm-hmm. But something interesting happened with COVID. Everywhere in the world was on lockdown. People couldn't go anywhere. Incomes were affected, this, that, and the third. But a lot of people opted to use that time to migrate out of their 9-to-5 into freelancing. What do you think, because that was such an unsure time, what do you think would have, well, for you, from your perspective, what was the reasoning behind feeling safe enough to do that? And also, like, feeling safe and comfortable enough to do that, but like, what was your thought process doing that? Because I noticed a lot of people did that last year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was nervous, I'm not gonna lie, but prayer is what pushed me to do it. So leading up to me leaving the job, I was praying like crazy, saying, you know, God, just please guide me. Let me know if I'm making the right decision. Show me signs if this is what I'm supposed to be doing, or if I should stick it out with the job. Something else you should also be mindful of is a lot of jobs did pay cuts. So in addition to you, the persons losing the job or people being put on contract or people having the pay cut, that's what happened to me. I didn't lose the job, but I had a pay cut. So what I had to look at is it worth me directing so much of my attention to a 9-to-5, which has cut my pay, as opposed to me then painting and making more than double the salary, then obviously, which one am I gonna pick? So what I did is I watched my sales for a couple months, maybe 2 to 3 months, to see what the income was like. And then I would also have paintings booked in advance. So I'd know, okay, in the next coming months, I would be getting this amount of money. I'll be getting it, which will cover my expenses plus extra for months to come. So after budgeting and watching my finances, watching the number of orders I was getting, I just knew it was safe, or it was definitely time for me to leave that 9-to-5 and focus on My art.
Okay. I think the COVID situation forced everybody to adapt because
especially, it forced a lot of our hands.
Yeah, because especially in Jamaica, Jamaica isn't up big on online things. A lot of jobs that could be done online, they still want you to come into office to do it. And it doesn't make any sense because, like, personally for me, I work in IT, but they still want you to come in office.
Because I did digital marketing as well. So I do have a 9-to-5 now, and I do digital marketing. And there's absolutely no reason for me to go in. There is none. Everything can be done remotely.
The building is just an investment that, you know, having people working and saying that XYZ happened here, it helps them with the building value and their investment portfolio, XYZ. Sorry about that dog. But it really serves no purpose. And then there's also this antiquated mindset that people wouldn't be productive from their homes, which that's not true.
It kind of is.
Some people really are not productive at home, which is why the good has to suffer for the bad sometimes. They're also thinking about their bottom line, and if they're not making any money because you are slacking off, then they can't pay your salary. So it's twofold.
Yeah, that is true. Because I'm typically around productive people. Like, I don't know, I always end up in an environment of people who are lazy. So it's kind of hard for me to see beyond 5 feet in front of me. But that is actually very true. I can see where that might be a problem.
I mean, that whole situation, like, if somebody knows themselves well enough, I think they will be able to do well in that sort of situation. Because personally for me, I know if I am in my bed, I will never get any work done. But if I have, like, a workstation, I sit on a chair, I'm in front of a desk, me on my laptop, then work is going to be done.
Right. So just to get to something, right? So one thing we've covered so far, this entire series with the creatives we've interviewed so far, is the difficulty, is the perception of the people around them when they made the decision to start art. Now, so for you, you've been artsy, you've been creative ever since you were a child. So your family knew or had some inkling of what it is that you were going to go into. But one thing I wanted to ask, what is it that they do compared to what you do, meaning like job functions and stuff like that? And have you ever had a moment where you're like, because I think I remember the type of job that your dad does, but I'll leave you to say that. But has there ever been a moment for you where you're like, maybe I should do more, or was this the right call? Why am I not following in their footsteps? Have you ever felt inadequate in any sense?
No. Scott. I always knew what I wanted to do. Always. And I'm miserable when I'm not doing it. So my father is in finance, my mother is in finance, my brother is in finance. I come from a finance family. My sister is studying medicine. My younger sister is still in high school, so she hasn't fully decided what she wants to do as yet. But I'm the only creative. I remember when I was in high school and I was picking my subjects. And my parents weren't always supportive, by the way, which is typical in most households with creative children. My mother said, oh, okay, what career you getting built from that? So on, so on. So, and I just said to her, honestly, you wake up miserable every day to go to work. I'm not going to be you.
You know, I'm going to enjoy what I do. That's something you would say.
Yeah. I was like, I'm not going to be
you. Very barefaced.
I believe her.
I am going to do what I want to do, and I'm going to be happy. And that actually pushed my mother to leave her job too. She said, stuck with her, that she does not want to wake up miserable to do the same thing every day. So I'm happy. And we've all worked together before, which was not that job. What I could not be a creative at all, and I was miserable. I was so miserable. And after I left there, I've only been in marketing because I can be creative in marketing as well. I can be creative with digital marketing, with creating ads and so on, or just having just creative content or copy. and I still have the flexibility to paint. I love it. And I know people who study medicine and law and so on and so on. Like, isn't that great? So what are you really prepared for if you don't love it?
You'd be surprised. You see, when I was, the job I was in previously, I was a loan officer. I used to, when people would bring their payslips to me, the depression that I went through, because the people you, I saw, the people that you would expect to be making money, they're bleak.
Yeah,
and then the
yeah.
people that they used to, because I was in like Old Arbor area, that, so like we were a lot of farmers and stuff like that. I used to, when the farmers bring their bank statements, I used to the millions of dollars that them going home with. I was like, and people used to tell you that you must aspire to be more than a farmer. Them liar, wicked, you know?
What people need to tell you to aspire to do is to manage your money, manage your income. Because yes, I'm an artist, but my business is registered. So it goes beyond registering your business as well. You have to pay your taxes. And I know some people like to run from paying taxes, but you're going to know why you need to pay your NHT when it's time for you to buy a house. Like, that is when things are going to add up. And when you want a loan, they're going to check to see if you are paying taxes on your business. So it's not something as simple as you saying, oh no, I don't want to pay taxes. They, when you want to take a loan as an entrepreneur or a sole proprietor, they're going to do an audit. They're going to do an audit on your financials. And if they're seeing that you're just pocketing the money and not paying your taxes, you're not going to be approved for a loan.
So we have this entire season, we've drawn on and on and on and on and on about getting paid. You know, people, having people respect your prices.
That's the biggest topic.
That's the biggest topic. But no, you just introduced. I said, this is why women, you know, women will always be women in. And this is why she was saved for last. So you just introduced us to a whole new world in this creative field. Because a lot of the creatives you spoke to, they have their own small businesses. Their work is their small business. Mm-hmm. But no one has really touched on the proper management of finances and their portfolio and stuff like that. So where do you start? How do you maintain it? Do you do your own accounting? Do you do outside? Do you get an outside accountant? Like, just work us through your recommendations of business registration. When is the best time to do it? You know, work us through that.
The best time to register your business is as soon as you start. Because in order for you to get a loan, you need to have a registered business for 2 years.
Mm.
Some banks are flexible enough to have a business registered for 1 year, but most financial institutions require 2 years. I have an accountant, not a personal accountant, but I use her at the end of the year. So by December, she tends to audit everything for me and then have it submitted to TAJ. But once you're also registered on TAJ, you can pay it yourself. You can pay with a credit card. You could do a bank transfer. You could even use a Visa debit card. It's very easy. They even send you emails on a quarterly basis telling you how much you owe per quarter. So some people opt to pay at the end of the year. But when you pay at the end of the year, you're going to be paying a lump sum. So you're paying all the taxes that have been accrued for that year, as opposed to paying in smaller increments if you pay quarterly. Another thing that a lot of people don't tell you when you go to the tax office is that some people may opt to pay yearly because they may think it's easier for them. However, when you want to take an NHT loan, you're not going to qualify. You are qualified. It's easier if you pay, once you pay quarterly, then you can qualify for NHT. Once you meet the tax threshold, you can qualify for NHT. So because you have to be paying your NHT within the last 6 months to be able to use your NHT benefits. The next option, if you just want to pay your NHT without having a registered business, you can pay directly to NHT. As if you don't have a business, say you just have some cash or your spouse pays it for you, so and so, you can then still qualify for your NHT benefits. And I think in order for you to get the full 6.5, you should be making, I think, 100,000 a month. It could be a little bit less, I can't remember, but you can qualify for the full 6.5. And then depending on your salary, you can even get it at a 0% interest rate. They don't really market that, but you can get a 0% interest rate. And the bank's rate tends to be much higher than NHT. So obviously the 6.5 is not going to fully cover home. But if you have 6.5 from NHT and then you get the difference from the bank, you will still be able to use that significantly lower interest rate for a portion of the loan. But you have to be paying your taxes, because once they do that audit, if you are not paying the taxes, you won't be able to qualify, or you may be required to pay all your back taxes from when you registered your business.
Oh, that's a lot of information. And I'm glad you said it, because they really do not market. The information is not out there. And like, personally, I've been on their websites and it's very archaic. And the documents are extremely lengthy. Like, nobody wants to read all of that. So if they can get it in bullet points, I mean, like this, I'm sure a lot of people...
I was just about to say that they need to put it in a PowerPoint presentation.
A lot more people would know these things, because I'm sure there's a lot of young people, especially creatives, and the people that we've spoken to. I don't think most of them are registered, because like many of us, they're doing like their 9-to-5, and that's what they really depend on for their money. So...
To fuel
the RA. Yes. Well, what I've learned from what COVID should have taught everybody is nothing is sure. So if you lost your job, you at least have your own registered business, which you have been paying taxes on. So you can use that as your means to get a loan. When my husband and I bought our apartment, it was my art business that allowed me to get my NHT loan, because my business was registered and I was up to date with my taxes.
So Ali, as you know, a former loan officer, I'm sure you can lament on this, but I think Jamaicans in general are afraid of loans.
No. So I would actually say no.
I would agree with Ali on that.
Really?
You'd be surprised. Like,
certain, certain times.
No. No. Let me tell you. So you see, there's a misconception about loans, especially when it comes to us as younger folks, because of the ideas that our parents have, just older people have put into our head, where, you know, a lot of us are striving to not get loans. The number one thing you have to understand is there is nothing in this life you can do without getting a loan. It's unless you are worth some breed of money, and even then a rich man will tell you he would rather spend somebody else's money than spend all of his own to do what he needs. He will pay you back little by little.
It's better to have your liquid cash and you take a loan, so if something happens, you at least have the cash to take care of the loan, as opposed to you spending a lump sum of your cash and then if an emergency happens, you don't have that money readily available. So I know that. Go ahead.
No, so you know that? No, finish what you're saying before I continue.
Oh, yeah, I was saying that as Ali was saying, I know many big business people who are financially stable, and they will tell you to take a loan. They suggest that you take the loan so that you don't use up all of your cash, but you're going to take a loan that you can manage. And another thing is, when you reach out to banks, they will advise you if you can manage it or not. If your salary is not enough to cover a mortgage or a car loan, they will tell you, and you will not be approved. So, I mean, it's just to have the conversation to see where to start.
I know, Nikki, it really brings us back to the point, because Natalie made a very, 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 very solid point. It all boils back down to managing your finances. You see, financial literacy is not something that is strong in our society. And I always feel like we're at a disadvantage because of that. While we were in high school, I mean, I'm not saying that finding X is not necessary for certain jobs if you're going into it, but it is not the general skills and knowledge that we need. I just feel like the schooling system was set up to get workers instead of people who were able to manage their lives. So the thing is, you see, if the financial literacy was up, we would know all of these things. And I feel like at this point, they should be teaching money management in school. So that's really where the disconnect happens with persons in our generation thinking that, oh, loan doesn't make any sense. The reason why it seems as if it doesn't make any sense is because the persons we saw before us, they did not manage their finances, and as such it drowned them. So for example, me, when I was working at the place where all of us was working before, you know, good girl get approved based off of the salary media, get good girl get approved for house loan. So me go pick up myself now, go buy house with no real thought of how in God's name you're gonna manage this? Nobody really sits you down and walks you through the nitty-gritty. First of all, you're not supposed to buy a house if you can't afford the house. I'm gonna explain what that means. And I learned it 2 years after into owning this house and going through all of these stresses. You see, when you're buying a house, you should have a certain percentage of your down payment on hand to cover repairs and to cover all of the, to cover like maintenance. If anything happens or goes belly up, you can at least cushion yourself. Good girl never know that. Good girl never have that. Good girl just knows that she got any. She tell us that she can get loan for us. She get loan for us and she buy us. And I tell people all the time, I always like to say that I'm house poor. Not so much anymore because I've been, sometimes you have to live through things to learn it. But I wish I didn't have to live through it to learn it.
Yeah. What people and need to also understand is the cost is for the house. That's not it. You have your lawyer fee to pay.
Yeah.
You have the bank fees that you're going to have to pay. NHT, any loan that you're taking has fees, has upfront fees. You then have to pay stamp duty. You have to pay for a valuator, a surveyor. And none of these things are cheap. So you not need to have cash as well.
And so, you know what some of them will do? And it's such a hard pill to swallow. What a lot of these people will do, especially if they're independent contractors like valuator surveyors, etc., they will charge you and lawyers, because my lawyer did this to me. He charged us the highest that he could charge us. The valuators and everybody, they did the same. You want to know why? We don't know nobody. There was nobody we could call and say, oh, because everybody that we know that have a house or that own a house, they're not people you can approach. So, you know, you're trying to figure out how to do this yourself. Poor you. You end up paying all of this money out of your pocket and out of the money that you save up to can manage to do this in the first place. And it's such an evil thing that they do. They don't even take the time to explain and say, all right, listen, I'm going to do this one solid so that it never happens to you again. This you don't do. This you do. X, Y, they don't do that. Everybody's looking to take advantage of you, especially when you're young and especially if you're a woman. Because I reached out to my surveyor by myself first without my brother. And let me tell you, he said the price him tell me first versus what him tell my brother. Is if I have what? Is if I did have one big rock?
I was going to say, but I was hoping that wasn't the case.
Yeah, but it's not them taking advantage of you though, because how they charge you, it's a percentage of the value of your property. So they have all right to charge you that.
That's the part that made me cry the most, you know? That's the part that made me cry the most. Everything that they did was legal.
Yes, it's legal. It's a percentage. So yes, it's links, just like anything else in life. Because that's what I did. I called around to get surveyors and evaluators that my family may have used in the past. So I would have gotten a lower rate. I did the same for my lawyer. To get a lot, it wasn't a significant lot. Well, yeah, it was. It was 50% off, but they have all right to charge you that. They're not taking advantage of you. It's their right. Just like if you have a business, it is your business. Why do you need to discount your product to somebody else?
That's true. And that's the reason why I couldn't get, like, I felt a way at the end of the day, but then I couldn't get mad because they were within their right to do it. I'm just saying that, like, boiling it back down to the financial literacy and the management, had we had like a good like foundation, or at least you had persons to call around to, for example, so you were able to get good rates on your lawyer front, you were able to get like a good 50% off, or that what you said. But for us, for me, the average Joe, there was nobody to call around to. You know what I mean? Because nobody around me really had that money management down pat. So just to bring it back full circle to where we were initially, no, Nikki, loans are not a bad thing. There's nothing in life.
I never said loan is a bad thing, you know.
I'm just saying, like, there's nothing in life. For the people listening though, there's nothing in life that you can do without taking a loan. You want to start a business, if you don't have enough in pocket money, even if you had enough in pocket money, I wouldn't recommend you use it. I would recommend you get a loan. And you know, it's such a weird thing that as a conversation with creatives, we got so in-depth with finances, because you know, the thing is, Nikki and Natalie, we've really lamented on what and how it looks from a creative's perspective getting money. We haven't looked at it from a creative's perspective giving up money. And you know what this conversation has really highlighted for me a lot of them don't really, not necessarily the persons we spoke to, but a lot of them really don't know that they're stifling themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have any proper social media management. They don't have any proper business skills. And a lot of them don't treat themselves like a business. At the end of the day, you are a business. You have to have customer service. You have to be approachable. You have to have the right, you know, all of these things. They don't, like, just this little conversation is really just sparking this fire in my head to highlight the fact that a lot of them don't know the basics.
Yeah, and they need to be able to keep track of their finances as well, because going back to paying your taxes, you need to document how much money you've earned from your pieces, which means that you can't just charge them a flat fee. You have to charge the fee plus tax, because you are going to be paying back those taxes. So you have to add the tax to your fees, and then you also need to document how much money you've spent on your business. So each time you buy paint, you buy canvas, if you buy a light setup that helps with you doing videos, when you use the light in your house, you're using the light to do your job. When you use your water, all of those things should be documented. And I gave those to my accountant. So my accountant worked out my earnings in comparison to my expenses, because then you may end up paying even less taxes than you expected, because you probably didn't have your expenses at the top of your mind, or you didn't factor in your expenses when you were putting in your earnings for your taxes on TJ's website. So that's something else to think about. You have to send invoices.
Mm-hmm. Going back to what Ali said, honestly, a lot of the people who are in the creative space, and I find that mostly designers, graphic designers do this, is that they have this thing where they charge a quick money and they don't necessarily think about all the things that they have to do. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you have to live. Something might happen. Anything can happen, and the little money or the charger thing mentality needs to stop, especially in Jamaica, and the companies are the persons that they're offering their services to as well. They need to keep their foot down, because they need to put their foot down, because the persons who are hiring them also don't see them as a legitimate business either.
Yeah.
Because they don't treat themselves like a legitimate business.
Exactly. Whenever anyone contacts me, I send them an invoice. He asks them what is the price for whatever. And I use an app on my phone that will confirm when you have received the invoice and read it. So I will see that you have reviewed my invoice. And if you then choose to still go ahead with my services, you have to pay me a 50% deposit, which is non-refundable. So if you choose to not take the piece after, I've already done the work, you're not getting back your deposit. It's very simple. So you have to collect money from people up front. It makes no sense. You sit down there and waste your time and just trust that this person is going to pay you after. That same person may come back and try to negotiate with you after you already agreed on a price. Send the invoice to protect yourself. Show that the person has reviewed your invoice and still agreed to go ahead with your services. There are many apps that you can use. And then all you have to do is plug in how much the GCT is in your location. And then the app will calculate how much you need to pay for, how much will be added to your fee to then cover your taxes. And something else you need to keep in mind, the higher your fees, the higher your taxes. So do not incur those fees. They add up. This is going to add up.
And would you be okay with saying the app that you use? Yeah.
I use, Bookipi. That's BOOKIPI. So it numbers each invoice for you. Once it is sent, I will see if it has been read or if it's still at sent. Sent means that they have not reviewed it. And then after each invoice is sent, once they have paid you, you can then mark it as paid. And once it's paid, they receive another email confirming that the payment has been received. And then you have the log in your app to show all things that have been paid. And it highlights how much you have made from each sale or each service. And each invoice is numbered, so you can keep track of the number of sales that you have made throughout the year or even longer, because you can sort it by date as well.
Okay. All right. So, you know, what I'm cooling down from the finance topic, like for all of you guys listening though, I really, 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 really want you to take heed, because it's one thing to say that, you know, you're not getting the proper financial what's that word I'm looking for? It's one thing to say that people don't respect their prices, but do you respect yourself? Essentially, is what it boils down to. Because it's one, I noticed that complaining is a part of our nature a lot of the times, but complaining gets you nothing and nowhere very quickly. What are you doing to make it easier or to make it harder for persons to take advantage of you and to make it easier for you to do your work? Because what Natalie has explained is really a good summary of having a good manage or a good hold on your business management. And it also sounds like, you know, doing this will prevent you from running up and down like a chicken without a head. So because at the end of the day, when these people come knocking in, or you're not scrambling to try and get everything together, everything is already there in a folder. It's like, here, here's all the business details that you want. So I want you guys to really take heed. Now, Natalie, recently I saw that, I don't know if it's a recent thing or a new thing, but I got a notification, and I feel like it's something we're talking about, because we also don't talk about, we haven't spoken on health yet. That's something we're touching on for season two. If you want to come back, you can. You know, shameless plug. But you recently, you had a live with this page called PCOS 110 in Jamaica. Can you just share really quickly what I remember conversation that we had when we used to work together, but can you just share really quickly what PCOS is, where they can find the page or the social media so that they can learn more about it? Just give us a quick run through of the whole PCOS situation.
Well, PCOS or PCOS is polycystic ovary syndrome. It is where each woman has different side effects. So it's a case where you have, once you have PCOS, it can affect your fertility, it can affect your weight. A lot of people tend to gain weight once they have PCOS. You can also have, some people grow excess hair. So even facial hair, hair on their arms, hair on their legs, it grows in excess. Some experience hair loss. Some experience depression, anxiety. Some persons have very tiny cysts that cover their ovaries. The ovary also tends to be a bit larger when you have PCOS. So basically it's something that affects your insulin. You tend to have insulin resistance, and you would also have higher levels of testosterone, which can affect your fertility as well. It affects your fertility, your mental health, your physical health. You're also predisposed to diabetes once you have PCOS. So in the live that you're talking about, I was discussing ways to naturally control it to avoid some of these health issues. Because my PCOS got very bad in the last 2 years, where I was hospitalized. I had to get surgery done to remove a cyst that ruptured and caused internal bleeding. And it's a lot. You'll hear it when my story comes out. It's a lot, because they're gonna post one of my story on the page as well. And that page is, let me just get the handle for you. It's PCOS 1 in 10 JA.
All right. Now, the reason why I felt like mentioning it is because since we're here and I just stumbled upon it the other night, I figured it would be a good thing for you to just put it out there, because, you know, word of mouth, nothing hurts than putting it out there. So guys, just this is just a little helpful tidbit, because PCOS is one of those things that you don't learn about until you're older. Because when you go to doctors and stuff like that, my understanding of this is that they can misdiagnose you, and they do misdiagnose a lot. They don't pay attention to what women are telling them. They don't, they think it's beyond them or above them to go into trying to find out what, how many diseases or, you know, illnesses have these side effects, and then doing the process of elimination to try and figure out what's really wrong with this individual. So it's really good to have as much information on hand as possible. So like Natalie said, it's PCOS 1 in 10 JA. The information along with hers will be in the description box. I heard some stories, not just on the live that you had, but like from other women, and how they struggled for years to figure out just what the heck was wrong with them. And then,
you know, I was just saying, personally, as like somebody who was diagnosed with that recently, I'm always going to the doctor. Like any little thing that is wrong with me, to the doctor. And that's how I figured out what was wrong with me, because I was going through some symptoms of things that were happening to me personally. And the doctor suggested, you know, that I do
a blood test.
Well, not a blood test, but an ultrasound. Yeah, and I went through the whole process. Shit was weird. But I eventually, you know, figured out what was wrong because I started growing like a mustache. I mean, I've personally, to me, I've always had a faint mustache because their hair has always been on my face. But then it started to become like slightly more visible. And then everybody knows I've always been skinny. Last year, I've gone a lot of weight.
So
was the same size.
No, but remember when I was at that company we all worked at, I was always fairly small. And then when my PCOS got out of hand, I got up to 145. I've never been 145 in my life. I've always gone between 115 and 120. And it was a struggle. It was a struggle for me to gain weight. And then when I came off birth control, because birth control masks a lot of the symptoms, I just blew up, like, quickly.
I remember. It all happened
so fast.
She used to come in every day, and she's like, oh my God, I can't bother. I'm so tired. I'm tired of this. And then I'd be like, what happened? And she's like, so, here's the thing. And you know, she always have on her rings and all her rings, you know. So she just flashes her fingers and her rings through, and she's like, so I came off my birth control, and she's just going through all the weight concerns. I'm like, oh my God. I used to feel so bad because there's nothing I could physically do. But you could, I could see on your face the stress that you were going, like you had lines in your face frame. You had lines, literal lines. And I was like, oh my God. But and another thing, like, guys, you really have to be careful about the doctors that you go to. Yeah. Like, I know we're extending beyond the scope of creatives, and we're gonna wrap up soon. But
yes,
this is gonna be fun for Shen to edit. But you know, she always posts it. But be careful of the doctors that you go to. I didn't know that I had a peach allergy until it almost killed me. So I just eat peaches, like American peaches, not pear. Am I confusing myself? I'm confusing myself. So
yeah,
peaches.
You're confusing yourself. Yeah.
So peaches, sorry. So I would always eat peaches. I would notice that whenever I do that, a couple days after, I would have this pain over where over my left side. So I think I have appendicitis, you know. No. So when I go to the doctor, it turns out that I had a bladder infection, I had a UTI or whatever. So, you know, trying to figure out how the heck that happened. Anyways, took the antibiotics, everything went off. So I went back to eating peaches. It came back. And I had to do my own deduction to realize that my allergic reaction to this fruit didn't show as an expected thing, but it affected my bladder for some reason. But the doctors never do any. I had to do my own deduction, guys. You have to be really careful of the medical attention that you're getting, because some of these people, they really don't care.
Yeah, because I used to go to, when I went to the doctor once, I was diagnosed with having anxiety. So I was put on propranolol to manage my anxiety. But then nobody could feel like, are you stressed? No. What's happened? Like, I just had palpitations. I'm not sure. It just comes on every now and then. And then after I got a proper PCOS diagnosis, I learned that PCOS causes anxiety. It causes depression. Yeah. So you have to do a lot of reading for yourself or find the right doctor that you're most comfortable with. But there are some signs as well. So like what Nikki was saying, where she saw her mustache getting thicker. When you see those things like a beard or a mustache or acne, or missing a period for months is a serious sign. A lot of women have once you have irregular periods, get it checked. It is not normal. Also, painful periods is not normal. Having excruciating cramps and vomiting, it's not normal. Because since I got my diet under control, I don't have cramps. I have no cramps. I have no pain. My period just comes and that's it. I don't have awful acne when it happens. I don't feel nauseous at nothing. It just comes and it does it. It just has its days and then it goes. So you really need to find out what's wrong.
I think Natalie needs to divulge her secrets.
We can do that next season. Yes. So she can come back next season.
Yes.
And you know, we're raised to think that, like she just said, these period symptoms and stuff like that, they aren't normal. And we're raised to believe that they are, like, you know, your period just hurts and whatnot. But like I said, guys, visit the page. Try it. If you're a woman especially, try and just go through the information that they have or the recommendations that they have, and that they will eventually put more on the page. And you know, sit down with your doctor and talk if you go through these symptoms. So just to wrap up, Natalie, my last question or my last thing to you, Shen may have her last statement, but my thing is just to summarize, what are your top five recommendations to new, because you know, you can't tell old people in a them craft long time nothing, so forget them. What are your top five recommendations to new up and coming creatives that are getting into the game like myself?
Well, I would say heavily invest in digital marketing, and it's not just posting that you should be looking at. If you have a Facebook or Instagram page set up, for instance, check your insights. So once your page is set as being a business page, which I would suggest for anyone, your page should not be a personal page if you're hoping to sell or market yourself. Once you have a business page, you will see a button that says insights. When you click on the insights, you'll be able to see what days or what time of the day you get the highest traction or you have the most page visits. So once you get that, then you'll know, okay, on these days, I need to have content ready to post. You should also make sure you do Instagram stories. Most people tend to click through stories now as opposed to just looking at the static posts on your page. And video content tends to get more conversions than a static post. And you should always also respond to your comments as soon as you get them within an hour or two, because that would help as well with your SEO, which is search engine optimization. So more people will be able to see your page or see your content. But yeah, heavily invest in digital marketing. When we get back to some amount of normalcy, or when we can now have face-to-face meetups, I would suggest that any young artist try to get involved in as many art pop-ups as possible. There are some like Kingston Night Market, as I mentioned, where they charge a small fee for you to use the space, but they do get a lot of traffic, so you will benefit from it. So even if it's a case where you go one night and you get no sales, have your business card readily available, because people may call you back. And don't give up after one night. Keep going back, listen to the feedback. The feedback will also help you to understand what pieces people tend to prefer, what they like about your art, so and so. So you know, all right, maybe I should produce more of this. Maybe I should produce something that is more marketable, for instance. So definitely go to the pop-ups, definitely invest in digital marketing, register your business, ensure that you pay your taxes on time, look out for those TAJ emails because they will advise you. And if you are extremely late, they will call you to let you know, because you accrue fees the later you pay your taxes. So always ensure that you pay your taxes, get an accountant. If it is that you're not sure how to get started, the accountant will be able to walk you through. And it does not need to be a chartered accountant. You could get a freelance accountant who's familiar with the tax system to then get you set up with TAJ and do your filing for you, and have someone that you trust that can also walk you through managing TAJ on your own and paying the taxes and so on and so forth. And also make sure to have your invoices, make sure to add taxes to your prices, and just keep a log. It could be an Excel sheet of the amount of expenses you have. Or what I do is I scan all my receipts whenever I make a purchase for my business. I have all my light bills, water bill, internet bills, so and so. So all of that can just be sent straight to the accountant to have her work out everything for me. So just treat your craft like a business if it is that you want to make money from it. Don't treat it like a hobby, because if you don't have your business set up, it is a hobby. You just have cash that you're getting, but there's nothing you can really do with it unless when you register your business, you choose to pay all your back taxes. So yeah, that's all I have so far.
All right. Awesome. Mm-hmm. And since we're very much trapped for time, I want to thank Natalie for coming. And thank you for dropping a boatload of knowledge on us and all the people that are listening. But quickly though, can you give the persons listening the handle to your page?
Sure. My Instagram page is Natalie Simone. That's NataliSimone. So that is my personal page. And if you visit my personal page, you'll also see the link to my business page where I post only paintings.
All right. Thank you. And Ali, I know we joked with Javon before that, you know, he needs to start the task force for creatives. But I think now more than ever, I think it is a serious thing. And it's something that somebody actually needs to do.
Well, in this sense, speaking to Natalie, it has evolved somewhat. Right. Instead of just a regular task force, we could do like creatives in business or treating your craft like a business, like have it be like a workshop pop-ups and stuff like that. This is a business idea, an actual thing.
Exactly. Say no more, no more.
All right. We can talk about that at a later date.
Yes, yes, yes. And again, thanks to my lovely co-host, Ali, for always coming with the energy and the vibe. So thank you guys again for listening and tuning in. This is the end of our first season of Creative Speak. We want to say a special thanks to all of our guests. You guys are appreciated. We thank you for your time, your energy, and your effort. And as always, you can find the podcast on your favorite podcasting app because we're everywhere. And you know what we say here on Human Being, we're all human beings on the inside, but being is what we should strive for.